or thearts.org.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. A little bit later on in this program, we're going to talk about the president's speech from the Oval Office last night. But first up, we're going to get an update about what's happening with the Postal Service with Alan Peacock and Al Friedman from the National Association of Letter Carriers. They've been on before, and there's a lot of issues facing the postal workers. And we talk a lot on this station about the race to the bottom, the disappearance of the middle class, and this is one of the prime examples of where that might be happening. And Alan and Al, welcome back to WMNF. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Rob.
Thank you.
All right, so let's start with some of the issues that you're most concerned about the post office. I read the other day that President Trump was complaining that Amazon is taking advantage of the Postal Service. Is the president right on that?
Well, The advantage is taken by all the other delivery services, because the last mile is one of the things that's the most costly part of delivery for all of us, all right? But the Postal Service, where we go to 17 million addresses 6 to 7 times a week, and we're there every day, the other delivery services look at the advantage of just dropping off that last mile at our offices for letter carriers to deliver.
Does the Postal Service charge Amazon enough? I think that was...
You have to look at the whole issue. There's 148 million addresses that we deliver to daily, 6 days a week. That goes from California all the way to New York City. Let's cover Kansas City, Kansas in the middle of the country. That they consider all rural territory. We're going to go buy that address every day, 6 days a week. So for Amazon to pay us a discounted fee is work that we can take because we're going past it anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's no additional cost to the post office. It's mainly going to be total revenue. So when you're looking at FedEx now and UPS, what they call that last mile of delivery, when they deem that that is going to cost them money, where they're infringes on their profits, they'll turn and go to the post office and we charge them a flat fee per package to deliver. And again, why wouldn't we? We're going past that house anyway, mandated by Congress that we deliver 6 days a week to every address in America.
So has the president backed away from his complaint?
He's backed away from privatizing, but still coming after how we deliver mail, how many days a week we can be delivering mail. That's still on the table. So for 6 days, the other issue that we're looking at is what the post office and you personally as a recipient of mail, we have that mailbox is something you put up that is a business between you and the Postal Service. Some people will call it a monopoly on us delivering that mail. The sanctity of your mail is the most important part to us, that we're the only people allowed in that box. And it is a federal offense if anybody else goes in that box and takes something, or we charge them postage if they try to deliver you something into that mailbox. What we are now looking at is FedEx, UPS, and especially like Amazon is getting into their own drivers. They're trying to say the time it takes to walk to a door, it could be cut in half if they were allowed to use your mailbox. If you take away that monopoly, Joe's Pizza Place can hire a 15-year-old kid saying, hey, go throw these flyers in these mailboxes. I just got done delivering your credit card, and that's the only way we send it to you is in the mailbox. Oh, that looks like a credit card. Let me take this out and put a flyer in. Those are the people that will have no fear of losing what? Being delivering a flyer to your box and taking something? And then will it be a federal offense then because it's not a mandated mailbox?
So the president wants to open up the mailboxes and apartment boxes to Amazon and to UPS and to the pizza guy.
Yes, yeah. That's the talk that's out there right now based on what's coming down the line of postal reform.
What's the penalty? If it, let's say that I'm a thief and I go into somebody's mailbox and I rip out the credit card application, or I rip out that package that the grandma has sent. What's the penalty if I go in there and steal something from a mailbox right now?
If you're a postal employee and that happens, first, you'll be immediately fired. Second is they will bring you to, you will go to through the justice system and be going through court.
It's a big deal.
It's absolutely a big deal. Yeah. When you do that to a delivery person delivering a flyer who absolutely takes your credit card or takes your personal information that's already been delivered from the Postal Service, he has access now to that mailbox with no monopoly.
All right, so a lot of people live in apartment buildings, and there's those big blocks of mailboxes in apartment buildings. One key opens the whole panel and lets the mail person stuff all the mail in there. Are you saying that Amazon and UPS might get access to that key?
We don't know. But that same key opens up what we call parcel lockers, which is connected to your mailbox, which is an arrow key, as we call it, which can open up the arrow box section of those mail receptacles, which could be from 12 to 50. It also opens up the parcel locker. They want to be able to have access to that as well. And if they have access to that, they'll also have access to open up that, what we call an NCBU box or cluster box. And you have access to 50 people.
Outgoing mail as well.
As well.
So the potential, if my bills are in the outgoing mail and I put a check in my bill.
There goes your account number.
All right.
Your checking account number.
We're talking with Alan Peacock and Al Friedman from the National Association of Letter Carriers about possible changes to the Postal Service. So, Al, if people are concerned about their apartment mailbox being opened up to these outsiders, or the street mailbox being opened up to the outsiders, what should they do? Should they call their member of Congress?
Absolutely. And tell them the privatization of the Postal Service has to stop, and you want the Postal Service to be the only person that has access to your mailbox for all mail deliveries. Some people have said, if Amazon or FedEx or UPS is so concerned about a box, put up a second one just for UPS, just for FedEx, just for Amazon.
They do it in the commercial areas. They put up cluster boxes and things like that. So
that would seem like the natural thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alan Peacock, I want to ask you about wages and benefits. I've seen all sorts of news stories in the last year that say, A, the Postal Service is hemorrhaging money, and B, it ought to be privatized. These are usually conservative groups or industry groups that are putting out these press releases saying that.
Right.
Is the Postal Service hemorrhaging money?
No. No, they're not. Actually, if you took any business in this country or anywhere in the world, and if you took $5 billion away from them every year before they open their doors for 75 years future retirees' health benefits, how do you think they would ever exist?
So that's where all the money is going right now, that the Postal Service is spending a lot of money on future retiree benefits. That's not the way most businesses operate. 75 years in advance?
Some people only do it annually, but nobody does it pre-funding to that extreme.
Who's requiring you to pay 75 years in advance for your retirees?
This all started in the in 2006, the Postal Enhancement Accountability Act.
That's a nice name.
It was done by a voice vote. There was no record of really who voted for this or not, signed by George Bush and everything else, to penalize the Postal Service for $5 billion a year for future retirees' health benefits for 75 years into the future.
Well, that really puts a crimp in the Postal Service budget.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But at the time, the Postal Service was so profitable, and we're supposed to be a nonprofit agency of the government. But being a nonprofit, when we were showing profits of billions of dollars, it was an easy cash cow decision to make you pre-fund this. Now, there's an estimated $50 billion in the Treasury that nobody knows where it is. And if they had to find it, I'd worry about nobody will know where it is. But you, like Alan said, from 2006 till now, 2019, of that $50 billion already set aside for retirees' health benefits, Not a penny's been used.
Wait a minute. So they're intermingling the funds that are set aside for future retirees into the general federal budget?
We don't know where it is.
Nobody's
accountable in the Treasury Department of where this $50 billion is. But the main point is, in 11 or 12, 13 years, you haven't used the penny of the first $50 billion, but you still want another $50 billion
Into
it.
Why keep adding to it?
Right.
We're talking with Alan Peacock and Al Friedman from the National Association of Letter Carriers. Alan, I'm always getting these mailers from conservative groups that say, look, we got to privatize the post office because we heavily subsidize the post office right now. Do American taxpayers subsidize the post office right now?
Every bit of the revenue the Postal Service gets comes from sale of stamps and services.
So these conservatives are lying to me?
Absolutely.
How could that be?
Tell them to go fact check.
Here's a better point. The government is shut down today. All federal agencies, either you're working for free or you're not getting paid or you're not at work. We're at work and we're getting paid. The difference is we are off budget from the government agencies like the Treasury, IRS.
So you're not shut down?
We're not shut down and we will get a paycheck this Friday.
Well, again, our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Alan, just getting back to the question of wages, you know, for years, postal jobs have been kind of middle-class jobs because they pay a fair wage, and then when you're retired, you get a pension. So in many ways, postal workers, and because of the union, you're the centerpiece of the middle class.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what's happening with your wages?
Well, you know, we don't have the right to strike, for one thing, okay? That's in our contract, where a lot of our other delivery carriers do have those rights. Now, naturally, FedEx is not unionized, so I wouldn't expect they would ever go on a strike, but they probably could if they had to for some reason. But the fact that we don't have that ability, collective bargaining, which the Supreme Court just had a ruling that unanimous ruling that arbitration is the most civilized way of taking care of business. And that's what we do. If we have to, we have collective bargaining.
So instead of a strike, if you can't reach an agreement during collective bargaining, then you go to arbitration.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's the way out. That's the way out of a strike. That's what they give you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what both sides have to live with.
All right. So what's happening to postal worker wages?
We have good wages.
Yeah.
And
is there a threat
to the wages? For you look at our right now, our employees, over 29% of our employees are veterans. The government does nothing but talk about, like, we need good jobs for our veterans. We need to have them with good benefits. They deserve it. They've earned this. They've done this for us. Al's a veteran. I'm a veteran. Believe me, all right? If you took those kind of benefits away, those veterans would have to be looking for some other substandard type, you know.
And you do, as a veteran coming into the post office, when you take the test, if you're just a veteran, you get 5 points added onto your test score. If you're a disabled veteran, you get 10 points, but you also get a preference for being a disabled veteran. How many companies out there today offer disabled veterans? They don't want to hire you because you become a liability to their health insurance, being a disabled veteran, and if you're going to show up because whatever your injuries, a percentage of disability you have.
Mm-hmm. So, Alan, just getting back to the question of wages, is there any threat to the wages of the post office right now?
We currently have a contract that's in force. Yeah. We'll probably be starting negotiations, next year?
Yeah. This year.
Oh, we're starting this year. But the contract doesn't expire right now. Yeah.
And what about benefits? What about health care and all that? Are any threats to health care for postal workers?
That there is a threat that's going on where how much a percentage we pay into health benefits. And for our benefits that we pay, you know, what they say is the average consumer or market out, the employee pays about 40% of that cost that they pay. But like with what we negotiated through us, we're into that almost 30% range that we're paying into our health benefits.
And retirees pay a higher amount.
But we have a union health plan that is a nonprofit plan that has been on probably AAA rated, it's self-sustainable through what we pay and what they pay us as well. But that's where you look at the when you talk about the middle class was at its best when it was unions that negotiated, where CEOs didn't make $100 million and your workers were making $13,000. You know, those are the differences when you have a union to organize and to go ahead and sit down at the table. What is this worker worth? When you see today that a CEO gets a $24 million bonus, it's because of what the workers have brought to that company and given their lives to do.
Yeah, they really create the product. They create the and the service.
Now, they have done a lot to try to attack us from the Hatch Act side, too, where they've tried to diminish our ability to organize and to bring the truth out to what's going on with the Postal Service and everything else.
The Hatch Act essentially says the government employees, you can't get involved politically.
On the clock,
when you're on the job. You guys are both off the job right now.
Absolutely.
Alan, you're retired, right?
Yeah.
So am I.
And both of you guys are retired. Okay, yeah. So I just want to make that clear to our audience that you're both retirees with the National Association of Letter Carriers. But what's going on with the Hatch Act?
Well, they haven't really gotten that far with it. They tried to, and then there were some court decisions that minimized some of the damage.
We cannot wear any political buttons. We cannot have any kind of stickers on us. We cannot sit on a workroom floor and say what candidates support the Postal Service. As a retiree, and we brought you, Rob, a sign that says the U.S. mail is not for sale. Yep. When we stand next to Kathy Castor and she supports that the U.S. mail is not for sale, this is a government agency delivered especially to, you know, the United States of America's customers who utilize us, that nobody should be able to come in except us and deliver you at the cost that we have. And don't forget about the middle part of the country that nobody would want to deliver to, Kansas, Iowa, you know, all those middle states where the mailboxes are sometimes 5-10 miles apart from each other.
That's costly, yeah. They want to go where people live close together.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's where the money is for FedEx or UPS.
And we're trying to put banking into the Postal Service. That used to be there years ago.
Well, what's happening with that? Because, you know, France has uses its Postal Service for banking. You're suggesting that we should use our Postal Service for banking?
You think of we have a Post Office in every community. And whether it's some of those have shown that they're not profitable, but they're still there. And that's what offsets the cost from the major metropolitan cities, help support the rural areas that have a post office.
This would take the place of those payday lenders and that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
If you've got a small check and you want to get it cash, right, then you don't have to pay the service fee to the payday lender, for instance.
Correct.
Yeah. How can people find out more about postal banking?
Just go online. And you can look up on where this bill is trying to get introduced. Call your representative. In Tampa would be Kathy Castor. Charlie Crist in Pinellas County is behind all these factors of not for sale and postal banking. So that's where we're looking for encouragement this year for the Congress now to be introducing the bills to put us on the right track to be where we are and to take us away from the pre-funding and let us show you that before the pre-funding, we're in the black every year. It could be a couple of $1 million, but we're still in the black. But because of the pre-funding, we're driving trucks that are 22 years old, 30 years old in some cases.
And do they have air conditioning?
No. And that's a major factor for where we've had several deaths.
Even here in Florida, you don't have air conditioning in your delivery trucks?
Never. We have a fan that blows hot air. Because if you can imagine driving in your car with the windows down, but you never go more than 10 miles an hour. It's like bumper-to-bumper traffic with no AC. How long would you stay in that car?
Yeah.
And that's what they do for 6 hours or more a day.
Now, FedEx is non-union. Do they have air conditioning?
Yes, they do.
The only exception is occasionally because of the fact that these long-life vehicles that are well over the 25 years, whether they're about 40 almost now, that they've been in existence, and they're only supposed to be in service for 25 years, when they go bad, they've been doing some leasing where they'll lease some vehicles, and it's mostly for the people that are having to do walking routes anyway. So they have air conditioning in them when they're driving to and from the route or whatever. But when they're out there and the rest of the vehicles that are doing curb delivery or walk-up delivery or anything like that, and so you got a little hot fan blowing.
In that summer heat at 95 degrees here in Florida, that's got to be hard on workers' health.
I've had several pictures sent to me from carriers showing me this summer that the inside of that vehicle was 121 degrees. Now, I was started to tell you, we just had a woman in Arizona who came back from an illness. Her first day back to work, she died in her vehicle, and the examiner determined that it was from heat exhaustion. Her body temperature when it got her to the hospital was 123 degrees.
Boy, that's hard work. We're down to the last 3 minutes of this segment. I want to ask you about a big thing that postal workers do every year, and that is there's a big food drive at the beginning of May that is countrywide, in that the letter carriers and other of the unions are involved in this. You're gearing up for that right now. You're getting ready for this big May food drive.
Right. I am the state coordinator and also the Southeast United States coordinator for the letter carrier food drive. Look this up. We are the largest food drive in the country, and for one day. Last year, we collected over 72 million pounds of food in one day across the United States. Florida has led the country, where we have collected over 11 million pounds. Then that comes from a lot of advertising, and we also look for, we have now just had an agreement with FarmShare, which is a food bank in South Florida. They offered us 8 million plastic bags, because that's how many residential deliveries are in Florida. So we will be putting a bag in every mailbox the first week of May, and we're asking you to take, even if you take what I used to say, 2 8-ounce cans, and if we can get a pound of food, two cans, we can alone collect over 8 million pounds just from every residential area. But this food collected, again, for Florida, will stay in every community. We call it neighbor helping neighbor. We know there's a lot of neighborhoods and a lot of people that have, especially today, that need some kind of assistance. These poor federal workers will be going to food banks in this next couple of days because they're not going to get a paycheck, and everybody needs to eat. But still, what bothers me keeping this is there's 16 million kids in this country who go to bed hungry every night. And that's on statistics coming down from Feeding America and other agencies. So we look for you to help us, and it'll be the second Saturday in May. We'll give you a bag. You don't have to wait for us. If you have a bigger bag, put it out there. We'll take it, and we'll give it to the agencies within your community, and they'll be able to set up their food banks. We're hoping for over 11 million pounds this year.
Alan and Al, you've raised a lot of issues. You know, maybe a lot of people didn't know that the Postal Service is not subsidized by taxpayers, that if it weren't for these prepayments, it would be in the black. Or this idea that maybe the letterboxes, the mailboxes should be opened up to FedEx and UPS and the pizza flyer guy. If people want to find out more, how can they find out more? Can they go to the website of the union, or what's the best way to find out more? Or find out about banking, possibly turning post offices into local community banks?
Most of this information is online, just like with the food drivers online. You can go to the union page, which is nalc.org. And you can find out any information of the latest news that's going on around the country that happens to deal with mail and letter carriers.
Everything from legislation to you name it.
Well, Alan Peacock and Al Friedman, thank you so much for coming by from the National Association of Letter Carriers. Great to see you again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
All right. Food drive, first Saturday in May.
Second Saturday before Mother's Day.
All right. I'm sorry. Second Saturday in May.
Saturday before Mother's Day. That's how you always remember it.
All right. Thanks, guys. Yeah. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Last night, President Trump again linked illegal immigration along the southern border with drugs and violent crime as he urged Democratic lawmakers to spend $5 billion to expand the southern border wall. It was his first national address from the Oval Office. President Trump argued that the wall was needed to resolve what he called a security and humanitarian crisis. For the next half hour, we're going to talk about the president's speech and some of the response to it. Here is the beginning of the president's speech last night.
Fellow Americans, tonight I am speaking to you because there is a growing humanitarian and security crisis at our southern border. Every day, Customs and Border Patrol agents encounter thousands of illegal immigrants trying to enter our country. We are out of space to hold them, and we have no way to promptly return them back home to their country. America proudly welcomes millions of lawful immigrants who enrich our society and contribute to our nation. but all Americans are hurt by uncontrolled illegal migration. It strains public resources and drives down jobs and wages. Among those hardest hit are African Americans and Hispanic Americans. Our southern border is a pipeline for vast quantities of illegal drugs, including meth, heroin, cocaine, and fentanyl. Every week, 300 of our citizens are killed by heroin alone, 90% of which floods across from our southern border. More Americans will die from drugs this year than were killed in the entire Vietnam War. In the last 2 years, ICE officers made 266,000 arrests of aliens with criminal records, including those charged or convicted of 100,000 assaults, 30,000 sex crimes, and 4,000 violent killings. Over the years, thousands of Americans have been brutally killed by those who illegally entered our country, and thousands more lives will be lost if we don't act right now. This is a humanitarian crisis, a crisis of the heart, and a crisis of the soul. Last month, 20,000 migrant children were illegally brought into the United States, a dramatic increase. These children are used as human pawns by vicious coyotes and ruthless gangs. 1 in 3 women are sexually assaulted on the dangerous trek up through Mexico. Women and children are the biggest victims by far of our broken system. This is the tragic reality of illegal immigration on our southern border. This is the cycle of human suffering that I am determined to end. My administration has presented Congress with a detailed proposal to secure the border and stop the criminal gangs, drug smugglers, and human traffickers. It's a tremendous problem. Our proposal was developed by law enforcement professionals and border agents at the Department of Homeland Security. These are the resources they have requested to properly perform their mission and keep America safe. In fact, safer than ever before. The proposal from Homeland Security includes cutting-edge technology for detecting drugs, weapons, illegal contraband, and many other things. We have requested more agents, immigration judges, and bed space to process the sharp rise in unlawful migration fueled by our very strong economy. Our plan also contains an urgent request for humanitarian assistance and medical support. Furthermore, we have asked Congress to close border security loopholes so that illegal immigrant children can be safely and humanely returned back home. Finally, as part of an overall approach to border security, law enforcement professionals have requested $5.7 billion for a physical barrier. At the request of Democrats, it will be a steel barrier rather than a concrete wall. This barrier is absolutely critical to border security. It's also what our professionals at the border want and need. This is just common sense. The border wall would very quickly pay for itself. The cost of illegal drugs exceeds $500 billion a year, vastly more than the $5.7 billion we have requested from Congress. The wall will also be paid for indirectly by the great new trade deal we have made with Mexico. Senator Chuck Schumer, who you will be hearing from later tonight, has repeatedly supported a physical barrier in the past, along with many other Democrats. They changed their mind only after I was elected president. Democrats in Congress have refused to acknowledge the crisis, and they have refused to provide our brave border agents with the tools they desperately need to protect our families and our nation. The federal government remains shut down for one reason and one reason only, because Democrats will not fund border security.
President Trump last night in his speech from the Oval Office, that's most of the speech. It went on for about three more minutes. All right, what do you think? 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. If you want to send a comment via email, you can send it to dj@wmnf.org. Well, the House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, and the Senate Minority Leader, Chuck Schumer, both stood together and gave a response last night to what the president said. Let's listen to Nancy Pelosi first, just a soundbite, and then Chuck Schumer.
Sadly, much of what we heard from President Trump throughout this sense of shutdown has been full of misinformation and even malice. The president has chosen fear. We want to start with the facts. The president is rejecting these bipartisan bills which would reopen government over his obsession with forcing American taxpayers to waste billions of dollars on an expensive and ineffective wall, a wall he always promised Mexico would pay for.
President of the United States, having failed to get Mexico to pay for his ineffective, unnecessary border wall, and unable to convince the Congress or the American people to foot the bill, has shut down the government. American democracy doesn't work that way. Democrats and the president both want stronger border security. However, we sharply disagree with the president about the most effective way to do it. So, how do we untangle this mess? Well, there's an obvious solution. Separate the shutdown from arguments over border security.
That's Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi last night giving the Democrats' response. That's part of their response. Well, in Texas, the Associated Press gathered several conservatives to watch the speech. And here's two conservatives from Texas, Brady Bunton and Wolf Chapa, giving their reaction to President Trump's speech.
When he talks of a wall, I think it's border security, and there's different facets to border security, but we definitely need it, so I'm completely behind him 100%.
It had a lot of common sense, it had very much a lot of passion, and it was not out of context, and it was certainly not fabricated.
Two Texans giving a positive review to the president's speech last night. It was fact-checked by a lot of people. There's a lot of places where you can go and fact-check it. Jill Colvin was the Associated Press fact-checker last night, and she looked at a bunch of stuff regarding the president's speech, especially when the president portrayed migrants as a blanket threat to public safety. Here's Jill Colvin.
There's been a pretty dramatic drop, for instance, in the number of illegal immigrants who are caught trying to cross the border between ports of entry, trying to enter illegally. Back in 2000, there were 1.6 million of those people who were caught. Last year, there were only 400,000 caught. And so it makes it hard for him to make the case that there is this national security emergency. That people coming into the country have extensive criminal records. In fact, studies have shown that immigrants actually commit fewer crimes than native-born Americans do, kind of undermining the idea that the president has tried to stoke since the very early days of his campaign, that there's something sort of inherently criminal or scary about immigration.
That's Jill Colvin, the fact-checker at the Associated Press. Larry Sabato is a political science professor at the University of Virginia, one of the top political scientists in the country. He was asked last night whether or not a wall could stop drugs.
They come from ports of entry. It's relatively easy to get them through, unfortunately. And there are tunnels under the pieces of wall that already exist. It's done all over the world. The wall won't stop a thing.
Larry Sabato from the University of Virginia. Bernie Sanders, the senator from Vermont, was given a chance to respond to the president's speech. Here's what he said last night.
What President Trump is trying to do is to create fear and hatred in our country. Instead of trying to bring us together as a people, he is trying to divide us up. Our federal employees deserve to be treated with respect, not held hostage as political pawns. Let us end this shutdown and bring the American people together around an agenda that will improve life for all of our people.
Now, White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders this morning defended the president's speech. Here's Sarah Sanders.
Southern border is the most vulnerable point of entry into our country. It's something we have to protect. Even if one terrorist comes across the border, that's one too many. And we have to do everything we can to stop that, prevent it. And that's what the president's trying to do.
And again, what do you think? Our phone number is 813-239-9663. That was White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders. Last night on his TV show, Jimmy Kimmel suggested that anytime Trump gives a speech, it needs to first have a disclaimer. Here's the disclaimer Jimmy Kimmel suggested.
The following presidential address is a work of fiction. All personalities, incidents, events, locations, and facts were pulled directly from the president's ass. Any resemblance to reality is entirely coincidental.
All right, so what do you think? Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Jeff Haynes is our phone producer today. Let's see what you thought of the president's speech last night. Let's go to Kevin in Bradenton. Hi, Kevin. Good morning to you. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing fine, Rob. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to hit on the three main things that Trump was saying that I believe are lies. And I know they've already been debunked, but I want to throw my own opinion in there. The one on drugs, I mean, if anybody believes Steve King, you know, the guy that said that 140-pound Mexicans are carrying 75 pounds of marijuana on their back because they've got calves like cantaloupes. Maybe you need to go ahead and, you know, work for the Steve King re-election campaign. But anyway, so I really don't think that one even deserves to be expanded upon. But the other lie that I was looking at is the one about the criminals. You know, all the immigrants are criminals. So here's something I just looked up on. According to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, poor urban Hispanics have lower rates of violence than blacks or whites, and also urban whites have the highest rate of violence against any of any group of people in America. So there's lie number two debunked. And then the one about the terrorists, if there's 2 million people on the terrorist watch list and six were apprehended on the southern border, where is the concern about all the other ways that they're coming in? So anyway, Rob, my main thing is it's hopefully something that's going to, you know, be understood by the people besides just the people at M&F for what exactly it was. And I think it was a classic moment in history to teach, you know, our younger people and the people that are going to be voting in the future of just what propaganda looks like.
All right, Kevin, thanks a lot. Thank you for your views. All right, we're getting people's views about the president's speech last night, and our phone number is 813-239-9663. Let's go to Andrew in Hardy County. Hi, Andrew. What'd you think of the speech?
All right. First, thanks for keeping WMNF the last real radio station in Tampa Bay.
Thanks.
But there is definite criminal involvement on the border, and I'd like to run a little bit of that down. The people that are criminally involved in what's happening on the border are all on federal payroll and state payroll. They are people who are violating human rights. They are people who are actively involved and have been actively involved for decades in places like Costa Rica, Guatemala, Nicaragua, and El Salvador. And we know what the CIA, the NSA, the FBI, and their henchmen have been doing. And we know about U.S.-funded, U.S.-supported death squad activity. We know about the United States casually overthrowing one government after another. I love all this talk about Russiagate. You know, oh, they're messing with our elections. They're messing with our elections. I don't know if it's true or not, but maybe if we stop messing with other people's elections, maybe other people would stop messing with our elections. I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah.
The bottom line is the crisis on the border is a crisis. It's not a security crisis for anybody except the people trying to escape violence. All right, well, what it is it's a humanitarian crisis, which the United States has created, continues to create, and Lord have mercy, we need to take responsibility. Just as we need to take responsibility for people in the Middle East trying to escape the violence that we have fomented and created there, you know, time for us to shoulder the responsibility and act like human beings again.
All right, Andrew, thanks a lot. Thanks.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks. You know, it'd be interesting to see what President Trump's position was, all the U.S. military interventions in Central America. over the last 30 years. We got heavily involved, as you know, in places like Honduras and El Salvador and Nicaragua. What was the president's position on that? Was he for or against it? Did he speak out? Did he speak out on undermining democratically elected governments? Did he speak out when union people were getting killed in Central and South America? Was the president on the record then? We've got to find that out. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Frederico in Clearwater. Hi, Frederico.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I think this is that this is not the problem of being on the right or on the left. I think we all need security, and that's very clear. My observation to the president's speech is that a steel barrier would be irrational, because literally the Mexicans are going to cut sections of the wall, if it's made by of steel, and sell it for metal scraps every night. This is cash. I mean, it's completely absurd to give the Mexican mafia a $5 billion gift in metal. They will cut it and sell it. I mean, everybody would understand that. Now, the second is, humans cannot be stopped by walls. You literally need an armed guard every 100 yards with a machine gun, like in a concentration camp. Any unattended wall is completely useless for a man, for a human being. They will go up, above, below, they will jump, they will get a ladder in any store and just go above. That's completely irrational. So we need security, but a wall is not the solution. It simply doesn't work.
All right, Frederico.
Also, I think the president is right that we need to stop the illegal inflow of drugs from Mexico at any price.
How would you stop it?
Yes.
How would you stop it?
Well, if I knew that, I would be in Congress.
Okay.
But what I know is that it doesn't, a wall does not stop human beings.
It's much easier to bring drugs in on a ship, in a semi-trailer, even in, you know, the rocker panels of your car. I mean, there's a lot of easy ways to bring it. You don't have to be hauling a pack of marijuana on your back through the desert. There's lots of easy ways to smuggle drugs into the country. Frederico, good points. Thanks a lot. Thanks for making those points.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Bye.
You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, and let's go to John in Palmetto. John, you're on.
Hey, Rob. How you doing today?
Good.
First, the tens of thousands that are dead, from as he mentioned right off the bat when he Trump did when he was last night, most of them, we can thank American pharmaceuticals for that. Because we are currently floating between 45,000 and 65,000 a year for the last 5 years on dead from the opiates, and that's what's pretty much, you know, as far as and the numbers that he quoted, it has to do with that. Which of course there's teams of attorney generals around the country that have hooked up with Mike Moore, not Michael Moore, but Mike Moore. Old state attorney, suing these pharmaceutical companies.
You're talking about the attorney general in Mississippi? Is that where Mike Moore
is? Yeah, he was there. He was there for 18 years.
Yeah.
He's the same gentleman that took the tobacco company.
Right, right. Well, the president, though, really hasn't, I don't think the president cares about opiates, even though you're right about the death toll in this country.
Well,
he hasn't lifted a finger, has he?
You're absolutely right. In fact, he's partially responsible for enhancing the environment around it, because one of the first appointments he had, I can't remember his name right now, but was for a drug czar. The drug czar was an FBI prosecutor. And he actually did, because he was connected to the pharmaceutical companies, he's now working for the pharmaceutical companies, which means all the techniques, the tactics, and things that were being pursued in courts, he's offering them up. It's sort of like you know, we had here in the state with Vineyard, but most of the instead of a border, he says that fentanyl, that's what's killing those people. That it isn't very costly to get here, and it doesn't come. It was coming in the mail. The U.S. mail was carrying it for years and years from China. And there's a couple of 60-minute shows which showed the amount of it and how the mail people were having to handle with gloves.
Yeah,
and
very, very dangerous if it's fentanyl. All right, John, thanks a lot.
Oh, okay.
All right.
All right. You have a good one, sir.
Okay. You too, John. Thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in. Just getting people's response to the president's speech last night, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Let's go to Gino. He may have a noisy line. Gino, you're on WMNF.
Yes. Thanks for taking my call. I would say you have to be, on a real serious note, you have to be tired of the lies. I think that the Congress people, when they, Democrats, when they reply back, stop saying misinformation or misinforming people. Just tell them he's just lying. It feels real. I look at it and I'm like, wow, I can't imagine a president in his first 2 years tell that many lies. I think he's told more lies in the first year, seriously, than any president has told in a four-year term. And Sarah, was it Sarah Huckabee?
Yeah.
Do you think that her trying to defend those lies at night, she actually gets ill, really gets sick because of trying to defend those lies?
Yeah, I think it's got to be tough on her because I think she's smart enough to know that she's lying and he's lying, and it's got to be tough on all of them. All right, Gino. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
All right. This is, let's listen back to what Jimmy Kimmel suggested be played before President Trump's speeches.
The following presidential address is a work of fiction. All personalities, incidents, events, locations, and facts were pulled directly from the president's ass. Any resemblance to reality is entirely coincidental.
To Gino's point that the president lies and, you know, it's happened so often, we're too gentle on the president. Gino, thanks a lot. Let's go to Brent in Tampa. Brent, what did you think of his speech last night?
Hey, Rob. First off, I mean, come on. Playing Jimmy Kimmel, if we're going to have a conversation, a serious conversation, why are you bringing Jimmy Kimmel in? I mean, a little humor's okay, but, you know, he thinks he's this big know-it-all now that, you know, he got a little attention in the past. But as far as the president, one of the clips that you played said that the immigrants coming across the border in the past year has dropped down to, I believe it was 400,000. Now, to me, that sounds pretty good. That might be a credit to the president.
Yeah, but historically, I mean, if you look at the last 25 or 30 years, the numbers have been going down for 25 or 30 years. They've been going down under President Trump, but they were going down under President Obama and even President Bush before that. I don't have the numbers at my fingertips, but they have been going down for the last 20 or 25 years. Part of it is that Mexico's economy is coming back. Part of it is that, you know, a lot of these refugees that we're seeing now are people from Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, where those countries have been destabilized because they've got lots of times right-wing dictatorships leading the country.
Well, my next point is this. If the wall is useless, and I'm not saying that it's going to be a fix-all, but if it's useless, why was it their walls built in the past decades? Why did they put them up back then if they were considered useless? And
A lot of the walls were considered folly. The Chinese wall, the Maginot Line, you probably remember from your history, which was designed to prevent Germany and from attacking France. That didn't work out. And a lot of walls don't work. And, you know, I think the problem that I see is that President Trump has this vision of World War Z. That's what he's trying to project, that waves and waves of hundreds of thousands of people are coming over willy-nilly into the United States. That's just not a true picture. There's not waves and waves of people. In fact, Jerry Nadler, the congressman, was in New Mexico 2 days ago, and he was at the border, and he saw nobody trying to get into the country. It's not a huge problem. And if you let people work here for a while, they tend to want to go back to their home country. If they can make their nut, you know, working as a waiter in Chicago, and they make a lot of money. If you say to the Honduran guy, okay, now you've saved $10,000 or $20,000 or whatever, they may want to go back home. It's not as if they all want to stay here. So I think the president is stretching this crisis out of proportion, and he's making people like you scared to death, and you shouldn't be scared to death.
Oh, I'm definitely not scared to death, but what do you tell the immigrants that have come here legally and have worked hard to get in What do you tell them when they say, don't worry about it?
Well, remember, these people are not citizens. Remember, Brent, these people are not citizens. They don't get the benefits of citizenship. So oftentimes
they get driver's license.
Oftentimes what happens, well, that's not much of a benefit, really. But oftentimes what happens is that they have to borrow somebody else's Social Security number. They pay into Social Security and Medicare, but they're never entitled to the money that they paid in. So it's, you know, what do you say to the people who came here legally and waited in line? You would say these people are not citizens. They're way at the far end. And if they're caught, they're in danger of being deported, as we've seen hundreds and hundreds of cases in this year. They don't have equal citizenship rights to those people who waited their turn. That's what I would say.
So you don't think that just the fact that they're coming across the border...
I don't think it's as dire. I mean, Brent, you think it's dire. I don't think it's dire. I think it's a few people coming in, and if they had their choice, they would go back to their country. They wouldn't stay here because that's where their family is. That's where their culture is. And I think the president is trying to scare the crap out of you, Brent.
Well, okay? I don't think he's trying to scare the crap out of you.
Well, that's what that speech was about last night. Listen to what the president said. This is just part of what the president said last night during his speech.
Tonight, I am speaking to you because there is a growing humanitarian and security crisis at our southern border. How much more American blood must we shed before Congress does its job? For those who refuse to compromise in the name of border security, I would ask, imagine if it was your child, your husband, or your wife, whose life was so cruelly shattered.
Now, more people have been killed by Americans in places like Pulse and Parkland in Las Vegas than have been killed by undocumented immigrants. So, Brent, that's why I think the president's trying to scare the crap out of you, because he says things like that. All right, Brent, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call. We've got to keep the show moving. Brent, thanks a lot. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Jeannie in St. Petersburg. Hi, Jeannie. What would you like to say?
The most effective wall in modern history was the Berlin Wall. I had a counselor who was an operative, in other words, he was a spy, in West Berlin, and he reported to me that he went through the wall into East Berlin 8 times. So walls don't work, and the only other thing I wanted to say was the spin he put on it, where the Democrats are preventing border security. They're not preventing border security. They offered money for border security. They don't want a wall.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. Although I do think the Berlin Wall was gross. There were machine guns. People trying to climb over the wall were gunned down. Maybe it was easy for your friend, and I hadn't heard a story like that.
Wasn't easy. Yeah. It was definitely, he was almost caught a couple of times, but he still got through.
But remember that when you have a repressive government, then you have a machine gun wall. So what does it say if we have a machine gun wall like Berlin? Does that say that we're a repressive government? That's walls surround repressive governments, I think. Thanks a lot, Jeannie.
Thanks.
All right, thanks. 813-239-9663. This is WMNF in Tampa. Thanks for tuning in, having quite a conversation about the president's speech last night. Let's go to Jay, who's in Oldsmar. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Rob. Thank you for taking my call. I like the president's speech, but I couldn't help focus on why he had one eye just partially closed, like he was grimacing about what he was talking about.
Yeah, he was grimacing and he was sniffling last night, and I couldn't figure out why he was sniffing so much. Let's go to Gus in Palm Harbor. Hey, Gus, you're on.
Hey, Rob. Simple problem, simple solution. Historically, bridges stand. You can go back, look in Europe, which has a much longer history than we have, and you can find multiple bridges that have spanned natural barriers. You look at the walls that were constructed in Europe, and they've all failed.
All right, Gus, thanks a lot. Thanks for your thoughts. And, I don't know if we've got time to go to another call. Jeff Haynes has been our phone producer today. This is WMNF in Tampa. Lots of emails. I haven't really read the emails. Elijah says, I tried to watch Trump's speech, but I just couldn't. I made it through about 2 minutes, and I just had to stop, writes Elijah. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Thanks a lot for tuning in. NOLA is coming up next on the Midpoint program. This is 88.5 FM WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg, the Bay Area's community radio station. First, let's get a break, take some news from NPR.